Yeah, you got to come off that. People here.
Blog Talk Radio.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Blog Talk Radio's Let's Be Frank. I am your host, Franklin J. Anderson, and this is your public affairs show that deals with the frank and honest discussion in the area of issues pertaining to the black arts and entertainment industry. And tonight we have a very, very special show, one that I think is fitting for what the theme of our show is about. For those of you who are not familiar, FRANK stands for Focusing on Redefining the Art Through New Concepts. And I can't think of a better way to do that than using a various art forms, theater, film, and even music, to help to politicize and to educate and make aware our public audience, particularly in the African-American community, about issues pertinent to what's going on in our community. And tonight we have a very special guest, Mr. Parnell Herbert, playwright out of New Orleans, Louisiana, also community and social activist. He has a play that's going to be coming to the University of Loyola in Louisiana, but it's going to have a sneak preview right here in Houston, Texas, on September the 14th at SHAPE Community Center. For those of you from other parts of the country, the acronym for SHAPE stands for Self-Help for African People Through Education. That's what we're trying to do on this show as well. Mr. Herbert, welcome to the show. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing very well, Frank. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I understand that you have a play that you've written called The Angola 3, which is actually based on a real-life incident involving three African-American brothers who are incarcerated. Angola is a state penitentiary?
That's correct.
Or is it federal?
It's a state penitentiary. Louisiana State Penitentiary.
Right. And these three men have been incarcerated for quite some time, but what's more interesting and peculiar about their situation is that they have been incarcerated in solitary confinement for over 37 years, and I understand it's for political reasons. Can you give us a little background on the Angola 3?
Well, yes, sir. The Angola 3, as you mentioned, there are three brothers, Albert Woodfox, Herman Wallace, and Robert King. And the three of them were there for three separate charges. And when they got there, what they saw was brutality, inhumanity, just treatment that what they felt was just so inhumane, they couldn't tolerate it. And they felt like they needed to do something to change, you know, something to improve conditions. They wanted to put an end to inmate rape and the poor conditions in the prison, the beatings, the brutality, and just, again, to organize. As Black Panthers, they wanted to organize in the prison. And they did that. When they organized, they were doing just that. They were putting an end to inmate rape. They were stopping prisoners from killing each other. And this was really a way that the administration kept prisoners in check by having them rape each other and sell each other for cigarettes and beat and torture each other. So when these brothers got there and started bringing about this positive change, the administration felt like they had to do something to stop them. And so a guard was murdered, and when that guard was murdered, Robert King hadn't even gotten to Angola yet. When the guard was murdered, Albert Woodfox, Herman Wallace, and two other prisoners were named as the perpetrators of that crime. and they were immediately placed in solitary confinement. The other two prisoners, the other two inmates were, you know, they got out of it eventually. But these two men were placed in solitary confinement and held in solitary confinement where they have been for the past 37 years.
Wow, wow. And you said they were members of the Black Panther Party. Did they come in, you know, having already been politically involved in that organization, or did they convert once they got in? Did they know each other prior to going to prison?
Okay, what happened, there was a group called the New Orleans 12, and the New Orleans 12 was in a shootout with the New Orleans Police Force in 1970, and they were incarcerated at Orleans Parish Prison. So while they were held in Parish Prison, there was another group of inmates, which included Wood Fox, Wallace, King, and others. They were on different tiers, and the guards tried to pit these two groups of men against each other. So you had a tier for the Black Panthers, and you had a tier with these other inmates. And the guards were carrying different stories back and forth to these two different groups. You know, like, you know, this group say they're going to attack your group, and just pitting them against each other.
So sort of like a COINTELPRO operation.
Exactly, exactly. You know, and that's exactly what was going on during that era, counterintelligence program. And so when the group of inmates that were not Panthers knew what was going on, they were a little older, a little wiser, street wiser, they told the guards, okay, well, put us together. If they want to fight, we'll fight them. And the guards did that. They put them together. But when they put them together, Albert Woodfox held his fist up in the air and yelled, "Power to the people." And the Panthers said, "Power to the people." And these two groups joined each other. So at that point...
So wait a minute, let me back up. So the two groups that the prison
guard
officials were trying to pit against each other actually joined each other in solidarity.
That's correct.
Wow.
That, they joined each other in solidarity, that's when Albert Woodfox, Herman Wallace, and Robert King joined the Black Panthers in Orleans Parish Prison.
So they joined while they were in prison.
That's correct.
Okay.
And so when they were being transferred from the Parish Prison to Angola, they asked Donald Guyton, whose real name is his name now is Malik Rahim, who's co-founder of Common Ground out here in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
They said, you know, what are we going to do now? Malik said the same thing you did here. You know, we're going to organize. Keep organizing there. We'll keep organizing here. And basically that's what they did. When they went to Angola, they knew, you know, they had this new degree of political consciousness that they brought with them to Angola. And while Wallace and Woodfox were brought to Angola, King was on hold in Orleans Parish Prison. This murder occurred. And they placed these two brothers in solitary confinement, charged with that murder. When King arrived at Angola several weeks later, they charged him with the same murder.
Wait a minute. How can he be charged for a murder that happened at a time when he wasn't even there?
That was the question he asked them, and he was beaten for asking that question. That's what Angola was all about. When he was still in Parish Prison, when he got to Angola, they charged him with that same crime because he was a Black Panther, he was an organizer, and he was placed in solitary confinement, and he remained in solitary. Eventually, they had to drop that charge on him, but they framed him with the murder of another inmate in solitary confinement.
Uh-huh.
Well, he eventually spent 29 years in solitary confinement.
Now wait a minute. Okay, now of course I'm you know, certainly a layperson when it comes to all of this.
Mm-hmm.
If you in solitary confinement, I thought that meant that you were isolated from everyone else in prison. And if you're isolated from everyone else, how can you commit a crime of murder?
Okay, back then. Okay, now it's a little different, but back then, the 1 hour you get outside of your cell, they would allow several prisoners outside their cell at the same time. And so during that 1 hour out, a murder occurred. And the guy who committed, well, who killed the other guy, said that I killed him. You know, it was self-defense. We had a fight. I stabbed him. And
So there was actually another guy who confessed to the murder.
Confessed to the murder. That's correct. And what they did, because they wanted King in solitary confinement so that he would not be in population organizing and keeping the Black Panther flow going, they framed him also for that murder. So King wound up spending the next 29 years in solitary confinement in Angola. From the day he got there, he was placed in solitary, and he remained for 29 years. And he eventually was able to prove his own innocence. And he was released, I think, in 2001. So he spent the past 8 years traveling around the world. Right now, King's been to maybe 15 different countries speaking on the case of Angola 3.
Gotcha.
He has a book out right now, From the Bottom of the Heap.
That's the title of the book, From the Bottom of the Heap.
That's correct.
And so if some of our listening audience wanted to acquire that book, could they go to Amazon.com? Where might they be able to acquire the book?
I'm sure it's on Amazon. And, well, later on I'll have his address. I can give you his address directly. I can give you my address, phone number, email address, where you can get it either way. But Amazon has it.
Gotcha. 347-857-2002 is the number to call if you want to chime in on our conversation or ask Mr. Herbert a question. Again, that's 347-857-2002. For those of you who are new to Blog Talk Radio, once you call that number, you will need to hit the number 1 on your keypad to get in on the show. And it looks like we might have a caller already. Caller, will you please state your name and where you're from?
What's happening, Frank? This is Clarence, man. How you
doing? Hey, Clarence Whitmore. And Clarence Whitmore is one of the actors in the Angola 3. And, of course, I had the good pleasure of traveling with Clarence with the Diary of a Black Man. And he's also the guy who puts on the Motown and More review at Miller Outdoor Theater, that fantastic show that happens every May. How you doing this evening, Clarence?
Great. How you doing, Frank?
Good, good, good. Well, now that I have one of the actors on the show, why don't we kind of segue into how, Mr. Herbert, you picked up this particular incident and decided to write a play about it. Tell me a little bit about what that process is about, because I'm sure you have to engage in some kind of research and what have you to come up with a script. So if you can kind of talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Well, it started off with my daughter, Shawan. Shawan came in one evening and told me about Angola 3. I had never heard of Angola 3.
Mm-hmm.
And she said it's a guy named Albert Woodfox and Herman Wallace and Robert King. I said, wait a minute, I grew up with a guy named Albert Woodfox. And we went online and I saw Woodfox's photo. And, well, as it turned out, my daughter met Robert King. After he got out, he spoke somewhere, and she was there, and she was just amazed at that story, and she knew that I would be interested. So that's how she brought the story to me. And I made it a point to go out to meet Mr. King. And since then, King has become one of my closest friends. In fact, I introduce him, and I say that, you know, it's not often you can refer to one of your closest friends and your greatest hero all in the same person, and that's how I feel about King. Well, about 2 years ago, it was New Year's Eve, 2008, I was doing a documentary. It's called The Last Slave Plantation, and it's a story about Angola, and they talk about the Angola 3. I was viewing that documentary with a friend, and she was amazed at the story. And I say, well, it's a good story. It's very informative, but it's kind of repetitious. You know, I don't think it's going to hold people's interest. And she said, well, you're a playwright. You write it so it holds people's interest. So I took up the challenge. I called Brother King the next day and told him about the conversation, and He said, sure, go ahead. I'll call Albert and Herman and get their consent, and it's on. So that's how I originally got into writing the story. And as you said, it called for a lot of research, a lot of conversations on the phone with King. I was honored to read his manuscript before the book was released. And you can go online, Google. Well, we've got several websites, angola3.org, a3grassroots.org. But if you would just Google Angola 3, mm-hmm. all kinds of stuff comes up.
Right.
I mean, page after page, there are pages of this. And so all information you can want comes up. And anyway, that's how I did the research. That's how I started writing the play.
Yeah, that's really quite interesting, because when I first talked to you a couple of weeks ago, actually when I first talked to one of your other actors, Mr. Robert Tucker, I did just that, and you're absolutely right. Page after page popped up on the incident. It's really just amazing how this has been kept out of the media. I mean, at least I didn't know about it, and certainly, you know, everyone that I've talked to, they were drawing blanks on this issue. Clarence, tell me, as an actor, well, first of all, which character do you play?
I play the part of Albert Woodfox. I play two parts.
Okay.
I play part of Albert Woodfox, who was one of the Angola Three, and I play the part of Hezekiah Brown.
Okay.
Who, then I'm going to explain this before I describe Hezekiah Brown. Hezekiah Brown was a very pivotal part of what went on inside Angola, particularly around the brothers in these particular tiers. Hezekiah Brown was a professional snitch.
Mm.
He was a nasty cat, man. He was in prison for rape, two or three counts of rape. So he was just a terrible, terrible, terrible person. A character that I never thought I'd ever even think about playing. You know, because, you know, you come across those type of characters throughout your career, you know.
Right.
But this guy was so important to this piece until I felt nothing but, you know, commitment to make this cat come to life too, you know, because he was very, very important. But when I first was introduced to the Diary of Black Men, the first lines of that play was, "I'm all man,"
right,
from head to toe. That tripped me out right there for a black man to be saying that, you know.
Exactly.
And the same thing with this piece. I don't know, it's kind of hard to even try to compare these pieces because of the longevity of the diary.
Right.
And the numbers of people that we met and affected and were affected by. But this particular piece, with these men still in prison,
right,
two of
right.
them still in prison, you know, this is, it's without doubt the most important thing that I've ever done. You know?
Tell me, how difficult is it to, I guess it's sort of a twofold question, to play individuals who have actually lived in real life, and in your case, you're playing two characters that, from your description so far, appears to be almost diametrically opposite.
They are. The exact opposite. You know, Albert, one of the Angola Three, one of the warriors, man, you know. Hezekiah Brown was a vicious, lying, sadistic dog. But it was important that he be present to really understand what they had to go through, you know, in spite of this snake being in, you know, and he was rewarded for his lies and stuff, you know. So, you know, at first I didn't want to be messing with no Uncle Tom ass Hezekiah Brown, you know.
Right.
But Hezekiah's important.
Right.
So I got past, you know, my little ego thing, and just went on with it, you know, because it's just as important, you know, in telling the overall story. He had to be told. He had to be present, you know.
Well, you know, Frank, if I can interject, I agree with everything Clarence said, and also what you said. He's playing characters who are diametric opposites, and that speaks to Clarence's skill as an actor. You know, because, I mean, not only at different times, but in the same performance, in the same theater at the same time, he's playing, he's going from point A to Z, you know, by simply spinning around. And even Wayne Dehart, our director, I heard Wayne apologize to Clarence because he did not want Clarence to play that character. But he knew that Clarence would be an actor who could bring that character to life. And I guess another way of looking at that, and you can hear from the listening audience because you know Clarence, but the listening audience can hear that Clarence is just the opposite of that person.
Exactly.
But as we all know, Denzel Washington won his Academy Award for playing the dirty cop.
That's true.
You know,
that's true.
After playing Malcolm X and Hurricane and all these different roles he played, he had to be a dirty cop to get his award. Halle
that's
Berry.
True. I think Clarence is just being very, very modest here. And I hear what you're saying about Denzel Washington. However, in terms of going from one extreme of playing a dirty cop to playing Malcolm X, but in two different pieces that were shot at different times. And, of course, because it's shot on film, you can shoot them on different days, and you have the time to, therefore, shift gears, get in the character, and what have you. But, man, this has got to be a difficult task to, in the context of the same show that's live, you know, within the same hour and a half to 2 hour span, to be able to flip-flop from one character back and forth like that. And that has got to call for a type of skill that I'm not sure many seasoned actors can do it. I've not seen the show, but I do know Clarence Whitmore, and I know what kind of outstanding, stellar actor he is. So I know if anybody can pull it off, Clarence can pull it off. Once again, 347-857-2002 is the number to call if you want to chime in. 347-857-2002. So when does the show go up?
Well, we're going to do a sneak preview and actually a fundraiser at Shape Center.
Mm-hmm.
At Shape, I'm not sure of the address, but it's the...
Is it the Alameda or the Live Oak?
Alameda.
Alameda, okay.
Yeah, I think it's 3815, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, the Live Oak is 3815, and I'm sorry, I don't know what the Alameda, but that would be close to the Alameda and Cleburne.
It's between Cleburne and Alabama.
In Alabama, exactly.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that's where we're going to do the show first there, and it's a fundraiser for Shape. And ticket information, you can call Shape at Alameda, and they'll give you information on that. But that's going to be Monday, September 14th.
Monday, September the 14th.
That's correct.
And I believe that Shape Center number, at least one of them, is 713-521-0629.
Yeah. That's
if people want to call for more information about ticket prices and stuff. So, yeah, that's very good. And so you said the Shape is a sneak preview. So where do you go from there?
We're coming to New Orleans. I'm in New Orleans right now, kind of ironing things out, closing up some, tying up some loose ends.
Mm-hmm.
So we're coming to New Orleans at the Loyola University campus, and that'll be September 18th, 19th, and 20th. And then we'll be headed back to Houston. And we're still trying to confirm something we've been working on with HCC.
Mm-hmm.
And even U of H, if HCC doesn't work out, because at one point we're supposed to do it at U of H, and the month of October was locked in, and we tried to stay in October. So now if we have to push it back, then we'll probably come back to approach U of H.
Okay. So right now it sounds like you're basically trying to do a tour of college campuses.
That's what we're working on right now, because that's what's been working for us. At this point, I mentioned New Orleans and Houston, also Southern University and Baton Rouge, they're coming at us too. But we've had people at University of Baltimore, a school in Philadelphia. I've just had emails from people in Cincinnati, Connecticut, and Howard University. So that's who's reaching out to us now. And so it started out, you know, we were just going wherever we could get, but now it looks like the universities are the ones that we will be focused on.
We got a caller, looks like a caller from the Houston area, I believe. Caller, state your name and exactly where you're from.
Oh, my name is Matt, and I'm from the Pearland area. How you guys doing?
I'm doing fine. What's on your mind, Matt?
Oh, nothing much. I overheard you guys talking earlier about some guy serving a long solitary confinement sentence. I just want you to inform me some more about that. I didn't hear the full story.
Okay,
yeah, these
well.
Brothers, we're doing a production called Angola 3, and it's about it's a true story about three brothers that have been, two of them have been in solitary confinement in Angola, Louisiana, for 37 years. One of them was in there for 29 years, and he finally got out a couple years or so ago. But they were Black Panthers, you know, struggling for change, and they were framed for murders. To stop them from doing the good work that they were doing in the prisons. And to this day, two of the brothers are still there in Louisiana, in Angola Penitentiary.
That's crazy. Did they have any alibis for when the murders occurred?
Oh, yeah, sure they did. But at that time, they were sucked up under the umbrella of J. Edgar Hoover's COINTELPRO, which was FBI... backed at FBI initiative against all Black activist groups, you know, in this country. And they had no rules. They played by no rules. They did whatever they did. They did a lot of murdering. They killed a lot of Black Panthers and a lot of other people that were involved in our struggle, you know. So they were, these brothers were up against the world, you know what I'm saying, the United States government.
And I understand the brother's question, yes, if they had any alibis. And something that we suggested is that you go to, that you Google Angola 3 and look at all the information that's there that shows that there's no way they could have committed this crime. Also, the widow of the officer that was murdered said that when they were first accused of that murder, she wanted to lynch them right on the spot. But here we are 37 years later, and she says that she no longer believes those men are guilty of her husband's murder.
Wow. Does that answer your question, caller?
Yeah, it did. And I was also asking, man, did these two guys pose that much of a political threat? Were you keeping them in solitary confinement for all these years?
Yes. Right now, today, the warden, Burl Kane, well, let me back up a little bit. March of this year, Congressman John Conyers, the congressman from Michigan, went to Angola, and he visited with these inmates. He spoke with them. He looked at the evidence in their case and said there's no way they could have committed this crime.
Oh.
And after he spoke with them and brought it out to public's eye for a minute, they removed them. 4 days later, they removed them from solitary confinement, placed them in maximum security cells, and they remained there for about 2 months. So they did spend 2 months outside of solitary confinement, but not 2 months, 2 weeks. 2 weeks later, they were brought back to solitary confinement. And the reason given is that they abused their telephone privilege. And that was something just as simple as, if you're on my phone list and I call and I talk to you and you say, well, someone else is in the house, I say, let me speak to that someone else. I speak to that other person. Okay, I violated my phone privilege. They place them back in solitary confinement.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how much they wanted them out of circulation. Now, the warden, Burl Kane, says about Albert Woodfox, he says, Albert is still pantherized. If I allow him out of the solitary, he's going to start organizing again. And I can't have him organizing in my prison.
Mm.
So that's how they see these brothers.
Okay, caller, does that satisfy your question?
Yeah, I just wanted to make one more statement. I said they kept this kind of quiet because this is my first time hearing about this, and I'm kind of like real like informed about like, national events and stuff like that.
So, gentlemen, why do you think that this issue has been kept under the wraps like this? Because, you know, once again, and as the caller here has just stated, very few people have heard about this.
Well, there's a couple of things. One, because it's in Louisiana. Louisiana is a little backwoods state, and you can hide stuff under the carpet. Just they hid Gender 6 for as long as they did until it was finally exposed. There's stuff going on throughout this nation that we don't know about. There are things that happen that the world would stand on its head, you know, if they knew what this government does. And that's one of the reasons for doing this play. People say our government wouldn't do these things, and we're saying, yes, they do. They do it every day, and here it is in your face. Now, in this case, I find that there are more people abroad, outside of this country, who are aware of this situation. Since I started writing this play, I've received calls from the Netherlands, Norway, Great Britain, there was one more in France. You know, these people outside the U.S., and they're all very well informed. Robert
Well,
King,
now, is that because people in other parts of the world are more politically conscious? What would you attribute that to?
Well, I believe that they are more politically conscious, and I believe also that people are looking at the U.S. You know, the U.S. considers itself the torchbearer for freedom, for human rights. And then when you look at it, it's not. The U.S. is one of the greatest violators. Mm-hmm. You know, we see that with the torture of the prisoners in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Right.
You know, and much as I love Brother President Barack Obama, you know, he's talking about closing a prison at Abu Ghraib. And, you know, but we got some prisons right here in the U.S. that require your attention, my brother. You know, so that's, again, it's about keeping the stuff under wraps as much as possible. And what we want to do is put it out there on stage. We want someone to put it on the TV and the movies and books and people hear about it and create that public outcry that we need to demand not only the release of these two brothers but other political prisoners and demand that our government stop doing this because they're doing it in our names.
Well, now, speaking of using the media and some of the other various art forms to help publicize and educate about these issues, and it's going to bring me to a question about what is it about Angola, Louisiana? I remember back in the 70s during my student activist days, I guess I'm kind of dating myself as far as how old I am, Gil Scott-Heron came out with a song called Angola, Louisiana. It was about a young man who was incarcerated at the same prison at Angola by the name of Gary Tyler. And if I remember the story correctly, Gary Tyler was, in fact, still in high school. He was basically a kid who had gotten into a confrontation with a group of young white students as they were attempting to desegregate the schools in Louisiana. I'm not sure if Gary Tyler was from New Orleans or what, but Gil Scott certainly helped put that particular issue on the map, as well as Angola, Louisiana. What is it about Angola that we seem to have all these incidents? And do you think this play can have the same kind of effect that other artists like Gil Scott-Heron had with his song in helping to educate people about this issue?
Well, and I'm going to ask Clarence to speak in a minute, but one thing I want to say on that, that song Angola Bound by Gil Scott-Heron and also the Neville Brothers had the same song. Those songs brought some attention. Our play is going to bring some, but we can't let it stop there. We have to keep it going. Mm-hmm. Angola, what it is about Angola was one of the most brutal, at that time, it was the most brutal penitentiary in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
It was a former slave plantation, 18,000 acres. And what they did, well, what was it, back with the Emancipation Proclamation, that was signed January 1st, 1863.
Mm-hmm.
And we celebrate Juneteenth, June 19th.
Mm-hmm.
So June 19th, 1865, which was 2.5 years later, our people were told that we were free. Now, what happened during that 2.5 year period? And they give you all kinds of fuzzy answers. And we know when you go to their history book, they've got definitive answers for everything in there. But this 2 year period, 2.5 year period is real fuzzy. They said maybe the courier was killed or whatever might have happened. But what really happened is they were busy writing the Black Codes. And they were also giving these southern plantations time to get a couple more crops in. Because the North also benefited from the cotton that was brought in from the South. But anyway, with the Black Codes were... And Clarence, why don't you talk about
that? Well, the Black Codes was really an extension of the slave codes during the time of slavery.
Yeah, right. Well, the Black, and I asked Clarence because there's a poem that Clarence does that covers
okay.
the Black Codes.
Okay.
You want to speak on that, Clarence?
Yeah, well, that particular section of the poem that I do, it says the 13th Amendment abolished slavery unless you were convicted of a crime. Then you became a legal slave. They controlled your body. They wanted your mind. But the Black Code were things like vagrancy and lottery, and no visible means of support. They could put you in penitentiary just for those things, just for standing around, not doing anything. It was a crime for a black man to not do anything.
Sure, so that was it. Vagrancy, loitering, no visible means of support. These were three crimes that applied only to black people.
Right.
And so if they saw you standing around in one place too long, you were guilty of loitering.
Right.
If they saw you wandering around aimlessly, you were guilty of vagrancy. And if they stopped you and you couldn't prove that you worked for someone white, you were guilty of vagrancy.
Right.
So
right.
they would arrest you and place you in on this plantation, which was now called a penitentiary.
Right.
But from that penitentiary, they would lease you out to
and
other
plantations. The convict leasing program, exactly.
Right. They would lease you to other penitentiaries, the chain gang. So basically, slavery, the 13th Amendment, many people think that abolished slavery, but what it did, it made slavery a part of the Constitution of the United States of America.
Right.
Well, from what I understand, not only was the convict leasing program one which the African Americans had to work on the plantation itself, but they actually leased out was an extension of slavery of this convict labor to big companies. A lot of people don't know that a lot of the railroads were built by some of these very same so-called convicts that were, like I said, picked up on just very minute. Kinds of charges. That is absolutely amazing, gentlemen.
Well, they were basically picked up to keep the labor force intact.
Exactly.
You know, because slaves, some of the prisoners, as they died off, they were replaced there again by one of the pieces that I say, simply by means of arrest.
Right.
You know, and nothing has changed to this very day. Prisons are still used to oppress.
Right. Now, how do we get productions like the Angola 3 out, more prominently, like some of the, should I dare say, the urban theater shows or what we used to call the Chitlin circuit? I guess we have to take a more kindly, gentler approach. And Clarence, of course, you were a part of the Diary of Black Man, which became really a national phenomenon that I would suggest really kind of gave birth to the whole urban theater circuit in terms of people seeing that, wow, you can really make some money in theater. But what appeared to me what happened is that you got people who got into the gang who, you know, were in it strictly for the money. How do we get that back to what, you know, playwrights like Thomas Melanson was able to accomplish with some of his works?
I think, Frank, basically is that it's the material.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is really, you know, like you said, there is a formula. After we opened up that door with that Diary of Black Man, and we absolutely did that, we discovered a market that was there that was being totally ignored.
Ignored, exactly.
Yeah, and like you said, then here come the guys that just want to make money
right.
and turn it into a clown act. But the thing is, every now and then a piece comes along, like The Diary of Black Man, and now here, Angola 3. Believe me, Frank, this thing here is just as dynamic and as important, or maybe even more. And I won't say even more so, but then at times I would say even more so, because these brothers are alive right now. We're struggling for their lives. We're not just performing just for performance sake. At least I'm not. I'm hoping what I do helps get these brothers out of penitentiary and help maybe change some conditions that that exist now in the penitentiary. But it's I don't know. You have to have people that are really concerned,
right?
You know, that are really willing to spend some money to back some projects like these. You know, because these projects are worthy of backing, and there are people. You know, I would say we haven't run across them yet. You know, but maybe perhaps as a result of this broadcast, we might.
Right, right.
You know, but the pieces. It's a very spiritual piece. It's tough, bro.
347-857-2002 is the number to call if you want to chime in on our conversation. Again, it's 347-857-2002. And again, for you guys who are new to Blog Talk Radio, once you call in, you will need to touch the number 1 on your phone pad to chime in on the conversation. Speaking on getting the word out and getting the show across the country, in case there are some listeners who are perhaps college students who can go back to some of their student organizations, fraternities, sororities, and what have you, and if they want to bring the show to their campus or to their city, how would they go about setting that up? Is there a contact number or a website that we can send people to?
I can give you a little bit of all that. My first of all, the phone number would be 832-494-4027. That's 832.
Can you say that again?
832-494-4027.
Okay.
And the email address, Poetic Panther. That's POETICPANTHER 2002@yahoo.com.
Fantastic. We do have another call in there from the 954 area code. Call and state your name and where you're from.
Well, hi, Franklin. This is Diva JC.
I'm sorry?
Joan Cartwright.
Hey, Joan Cartwright is on the air. Clarence, I know you're an old jazz enthusiast. I had an opportunity to meet Joan Cartwright at the Black Images in the Media Festival that we had here in Houston. And for the listening audience who are not familiar with this woman, she is a living legend. This is a woman who has written for John Coltrane, has performed with Dizzy Gillespie and Miles Davis, and we are honored to have you call in our show tonight. What's on your mind tonight, Joan?
Well, I wanted to address the brother's statement that maybe there would be, you know, some money after this broadcast. You know, we never know where our blessing is going to come from. I wrote the first 40 pages of my screenplay, you know, printed it out this week, and someone just read it and said that they thought it was good and, you know, there's more work to be done. We have to make the inroads ourselves. Because nobody really is that interested in telling our stories, but it really, it is enlightening to hear you brothers talk about situations that happened, you know, 100 years ago that we are just getting knowledge of right now.
Right.
And I've written 9 books. And I ask you to go and look at some of those books, An Amazing Music Woman, A History of African American Jazz and Blues, because we have to tell our own stories.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And that story that you're telling me now is very moving. You know, reparations, we say that it's impossible to pay back the reparations, but I was driving past a building that was being built here in Florida, and the little sister said to me, "Where did they get all of this money to build these buildings?" And I said, "Well, you know, if I could get you to work for me for 40 hours for free, I would be ahead." So we have to understand that black people in America provided the infrastructure for wealth for white people in America and Europe. And eventually that wheel is going to turn to in our favor.
Amen.
But we have to understand that. We have to visualize it. We have to see it. And we have to be ready when it comes, when our number comes up, use those funds for projects like you're talking about and I'm talking about.
Exactly. You know, something on that, something I say to people, especially young people, this is our best chance ever. You know, we've got Brother Barack in office, and I know this brother can't do it all by himself, and we do have to hold him accountable, and we also have to support him. This is the best chance that we've had in my lifespan, and if we don't take advantage of it this time, they're going to continue to walk over us at a greater, with a greater disregard. So,
and certainly, and it's not unprecedented, particularly in the film industry, that we have supported our own cause. When Sweet Sweetback was done by Melvin Van Peebles, which sort of led to the explosion of what we now call the Black Exploitation era, he called on Bill Cosby when he didn't have enough money to finish that project. When Spike Lee went over budget, I think after $30 million, doing Malcolm X,
yes,
he went to the black community to get the funds that were necessary to complete that project. There was a movie that Delta Sigma Theta, hope we got some Deltas out there listening, did back in the 70s. I think it starred R.C. Davis, called Countdown to Cassini.
Hmm.
So this is not unprecedented that the black community can band together and not have to wait on Hollywood to do what we can do for ourselves.
Right.
Sure, right.
Am I still on, Franklin?
Yes, you are, huh?
Okay, well, see, what we have to be real, and I'm whispering this, because Hollywood is the reason why our stories are all twisted.
Absolutely.
Hollywood, I say that the Jews made their exodus from Egypt, and they wound up in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And they wrote their stories to write us out,
right.
You know, and we run around and hee hee ha ha, but if we don't continue to write our own stories and stop relying on them, we will never, ever get our movies done, never get our books done. Yeah. I'm self-published. I'm self-produced musically. Nobody owns me but me and my creator, you know, and so many of the brothers in jazz did their music and checked out. They checked out. It looks like, yeah, they were drug addicts. No, they checked out. They came, they brought the message, and they checked out. And the rest of us are here to decipher the message.
Well, one thing what we're doing with Angola 3 is we're pretty self-contained. We haven't taken any money from anyone. We're doing this ourselves. And from this point on, the most expensive is naturally the first production. Once we finish this one, we will be in a better position to take ourselves further. And, again, it's just like I told all the brothers, all the actors, that we're not even in it, or I'm not in it for the money. And obviously they're not in it for the money either, because I don't pay that much. But we're not in this for the money. We're in it to get the story out. And I do believe, you know, just looking at the way things are happening now, there is some money that's going to be coming from this, because there's so many people who are asking for it, and we haven't even touched the stage yet. So I do see this blowing up, and when it does, the people who are in it from the beginning will be right there at the top when it's time to get whatever comes out of the deal. But my greatest hope is that we can do something that will help to get these brothers out of jail and to put this whole this atrocity on the table and make people realize again that this is happening and our name.
Cornell and Clarence can certainly, you know, chime in on this. When Clarence and I and the rest of the cast did The Diary of Black Men, I think one of the reasons why that became such a phenom, and for the listening audience who are not aware, The Diary of Black Men is the longest touring play in the history of black theater. And I think in part that could be attributed to the fact that all six actors who played roles bought into the message, that it wasn't just a performance. It wasn't just a gig. It wasn't just something else that we can place on our resume. Do you get that same sense with the cast that you have now? Has everybody in the cast bought into, you know, it's really about the message with this show and not just about building my resume and possibly getting to the Great White Way in Broadway or going west to Hollywood?
Well, you know, like Parnell just said, it's not about the money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not about the money at all. You know, we have some veteran actors and we have some young lions, you know, that have totally bought into this thing, man, you know, and from rehearsal to rehearsal, you know, you see the growth, you know, and you feel the commitment, you know, and like the diary, you know, it's a special piece, you know. I always felt that the diary was successful, and like this piece, it belonged to the people.
Exactly.
The people adopted that piece, you know, and everywhere we went, you know, it was the homes were open to us because of the honesty of the piece and the importance of the piece. And like Angola 3, this thing, I believe, is gonna explode just like that Diary of Black Man, man, because not only because we are doing it and, you know, it's a play, but like what the sister was saying a few minutes ago, it's about God.
Mm-hmm.
God says what time it is. And I think all we have to do is just keep on pushing.
You know, something I'd like to add to that, and you said how you did it with Diary of the Black Man and how the same thing can happen here because the people do buy into it.
Right.
And I look at their faces when they're rehearsing. I look at the seriousness. You know, nobody complains when they're corrected or when they're whatever happens. I get calls on a nightly basis. Somebody's telling me about something they found online. You know, they'll call me or they'll email me, and they'll show me stuff that, you know, they're researching. They're looking at stuff up at night.
Mm-hmm.
And this week, they're going to rehearse Wednesday, because they weren't satisfied with their rehearsal last Thursday.
Well, that's commitment.
So that's something that they decided they wanted to do. And I received an email to clear the way for them, you know, check with Shape to make sure the space would be available for them to rehearse Wednesday, because they weren't satisfied, you know, and then they're scheduled to rehearse Thursday. So that's the kind of commitment that these actors have. And I won't even call them actors, these people, these humanitarians, you know, these people are human, they're real, they're feeling the realism of the characters that they play. And again, as we mentioned with Brother Clarence, you can hate the person that you're playing, and that makes, and I see it with Brother Clarence, because he hates Hezekiah so much, he's determined to make him stand out and show him for the filth that he was, you know. But on the flip side, he's making people see Albert as the man that he is also.
Fantastic. Now, Robert King is out of prison now, right?
That's correct.
Will he be coming to any of the performances either here in Houston or in New Orleans? Is he available to speak
for
like a talk back after the show?
Yes, sir. Robert King will be here on opening night.
Here in Houston?
No, sir. in New Orleans. New Orleans on opening night, September 18th. And I don't think I even told that to you, Clarence. I hadn't told the cast yet. So we just let the cat out the bag.
Right.
So September the 18th is opening night, and how long are you going to be running?
It's 1 weekend. We'll be there the 18th, 19th, and 20th in New Orleans.
So people in the New Orleans area will have three opportunities to get a chance to check you guys out.
Right, and also what we're doing the day before on the 17th, I'm waiting for a response now from the criminal sheriff. I asked that they allow some young inmates to come out and watch our dress rehearsal on the 17th.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And also I reached out to some elders, to Council on Aging. I asked that they bring some seniors out, you know, who normally wouldn't come out for something like this, to let them come. So we'd have some elders and some young violators to sit in the audience together and observe our dress rehearsal and to learn from this story, not for the elders but for the young, to learn from this story how you can do something dumb, and we've all done some dumb stuff. You can do something dumb and go in for a simple charge. You can go in on a domestic charge and wind up being convicted of a murder while you're there.
And believe me, take it from me, I can tell you right now that those brothers will appreciate it and they will get something out of it. I think one of the more pleasurable experiences that I had in touring with the Diaries was in 86 when we were in Chicago. We had an opportunity to perform for some of the inmates at the Cook County Jail in Chicago, and that was perhaps one of the most appreciative crowds that we had anywhere in the country. And because this play is about them,
right,
I think that they're going to be very, very appreciative of what it is we're trying to do. Mr. Pardell Herbert and Mr. Clarence Whitmore, the writer and one of the actors from the Angola 3, it will be making its world premiere here at the Houston Shape Community Center on, is that September the 14th?
That's correct.
Which is a Monday, and it will open at the University of Loyola in New Orleans on September the 18th, and we'll run that entire weekend. We're down inside of our final 2 minutes. Is there any parting words, a message, or anything that we didn't get a chance to get out to our listening audience that you want to leave on?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you, Frank. It's been an honor to work with you on this.
Pleasure's all mine.
Yes, sir. And it's people like you that keep that message out there. And if we can keep more people like you on the air doing what you do on a regular basis, it would be a lot better for people like Frank and I, I'm sorry, like Clarence and I, who are trying to get our messages out in our own way. So I want to thank you.
And it's certainly my pleasure to have both of you guys on the show. And just FYI, you can have some of your friends who missed the show tonight. You can send them the link, www.blogtalkradio.com/letsbefrank. And all the shows that I do are archived, so they can go back and listen to the show in its entirety. In fact, if I get your email address later, I will go ahead and do just that. And then you can, in fact, just simply forward it to all of your constituents. We want to once again thank Mr. Pardell Herbert, playwright and community and social activist from New Orleans, playwright of the play, The Angola 3. Also, Mr. Clarence Whitmore, actor extraordinaire and just a fantastic brother that I've been knowing for I won't say how many years. Gentlemen, thanks for being on the show.
Okay, thank you, sir.
And join us in a couple of weeks. We're going to take Labor Day off. I'm not going to work on Labor Day, but we'll see you back on September 14th on Blog Talk Radio. Let's be frank. I'm your host, Franklin J. Anderson, signing off. Thanks for joining us, folks. Peace.
Because every generation of a slide reflects a movie scene often more than twice. A child is born to live within the master plan. Boy grows up, leaves his home to be a man. Vintage years of wine.
That's good.